predictions. USA Radio Network's John Clemens has more.
Backers of the Cal3 initiative needed 365,000 signatures to qualify. They surpassed that with over 600,000 delivered to the California Secretary of State's office. If approved by the voters on the ballot, then authorized by the U.S. Congress, the Golden State will be changed to three separate jurisdictions. Venture capitalist Tim Draper, a Silicon Valley billionaire, says his three-state plan would give Californians a fresh start.
North America will host a 2026 World Cup. Fox Sports president and COO Eric Shanks joined Fox News earlier today.
Well, it's a tremendous day. A lot of hard work is paid off by U.S. Soccer, the Mexican Soccer Federation, and the Canadian Soccer Federation to bring it to all three host countries for the very first time in World Cup history. Three countries are going to host a World Cup.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
The following update is for drivers who pay too much for car insurance due to DUIs, DWIs, tickets, or anything else. Our company specializes in low-cost SR22 auto insurance. We know that mistakes happen and offer free quotes for very affordable auto insurance meant specifically for you, the overpaying high-risk driver. The quote is free and we'll handle the filing so you can start saving money. Call 800-758-0725. 800-758-0725. 800-758-0725.
President Trump arrived right around 8 o'clock Eastern time this morning in Washington, D.C. after his summit in Singapore with North Korea's Kim Jong-un. We're starting to hear more and more people talk about the summit. Tanya Ryman is a body language expert. She talks about that initial handshake that everyone saw and what was being said by the body language of President Trump.
If you watch the initial handshake as they're walking towards one another, Trump extends his hand first. Okay, this is what the person of power typically does. So if you think about presidential debates, they both walk out like this, right? So once he goes to shake hands, he does it in an upward fashion, which is somewhat submissive. So he's kind of tricking him because as he gets closer, he neutralizes the handshake and then he pulls it just a little bit, that Trump pump that he likes to give. And then touching someone is a signal of dominance. So by touching him, everyone seemed to think, oh, he's being friendly. No, he was making sure that he knew, I'm taller than you, so I have more power, and I'm touching you, so I have the power, I'm in control.
Ryman also talks about the body language of Kim Jong-un.
He automatically feels a little insecure, but they're taught typically to mask with a small smile. So when you watched his facial expression, you didn't see much of a change. So when he tried to pat back, it didn't work because what happened? Trump patted again. So they were going through this little tug of war and Trump won.
That audio courtesy of Fox Business, and it was back on this date in 1966 when the Miranda rights are first established. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
difference between an American president and a leader of North Korea proves that real change is indeed possible. My meeting with Chairman Kim was honest, direct, and productive. We got to know each other well in a very confined period of time, under very strong circumstances. We're prepared to start a new history, and we're ready to write a new chapter between our nations.
The statement the two leaders signed says the U.S. will offer security guarantees in exchange for denuclearization. And this is USA Radio News.
USA Radio News.
President Trump arrived home from Singapore today with a written pledge that dictator Kim Jong-un would completely denuclearize North Korea. But you can count Senator Marco Rubio as one of the folks who's not convinced that Kim will give up his nukes.
Well, I'm skeptical of Kim Jong-un, and we should be. Everyone should be. The president, as I said, is optimistic, and he needs to be. He's the guy negotiating, and, you know, he needs to make the other side feel like he's serious about getting something done. But for the rest of us who are watching and know the history of North Korea, we should be skeptical. This is a country that's made promises before and has broken them.
Democrats are hoping to take back the Senate and the House during the 2018 midterm elections. Michael Loftus, he's a comedian. He explains why going to Hollywood for help when it comes to winning over voters might not be the best idea for Democrats.
I find it just hilarious. Like, how horrible are you as a political party if you don't, like, wake up knowing what it is you want to do?
This is USA Radio News.
Ugh, you guys, I am so ready for the beach.
I'm not.
What? The trip is coming up soon.
Yeah, my beach body is nowhere close to where I want it to be.
Same here. I've got to lose some weight before we go.
Plus, I know you're going to want to post pictures from the trip all over Facebook.
Well, why don't you guys try Calitrin?
Calitrin? That sounds really familiar.
It's super easy to take, and it's even healthy for you. You just take it at bedtime, and it does all the work for you.
You're joking!
No, I'm not joking, and you're going to feel good taking it.
So I got the Calitrin, and I got into pants that I had not been into in a year and a half. It also took my hot flashes away.
Hey, this is Jack, and I've been using Calitrin. I used to go to the chiropractor at least once a week. The Calitrin has definitely helped me, and I definitely recommend it to anybody.
This is Lynn. I've been on Calitrin, and I love it, and I've lost 45 pounds.
So where can I get Calitrin?
You can go to their website at toploss.com, or you can call them at 833-TOP-LOSS.
California voters will have the opportunity this November to divide their state into three separate jurisdictions. USA Radio Network's John Clemens has more.
Backers of the Cal 3 initiative needed 365,000 signatures to qualify. They surpassed that with over 600,000 delivered to the California Secretary of State's office. If approved by the voters on the ballot, then authorized by the U.S. Congress, the Golden State will be changed to three separate jurisdictions. Venture capitalist Tim Draper, a Silicon Valley billionaire, says his three-state plan would give Californians a fresh start.
North America will host the 2026 World Cup. Fox Sports president and COO Eric Shanks joined Fox News earlier today.
Well, it's a tremendous day. A lot of hard work is paid off by U.S. Soccer, the Mexican Soccer Federation, and the Canadian Soccer Federation to bring it to all three host countries for the very first time in World Cup history. Three countries are going to host a World Cup.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
The following update is for drivers who pay too much for car insurance due to DUIs, DWIs, tickets, or anything else. Our company specializes in low-cost SR22 auto insurance. We know that mistakes happen and offer free quotes for very affordable auto insurance meant specifically for you, the overpaying high-risk driver. The quote is free and we'll handle the filing so you can start saving money. Call 800-758-0725. 800-758-0725. 800-758-0725.
President Trump arrived right around 8 o'clock Eastern time this morning in Washington, D.C. after his summit in Singapore with North Korea's Kim Jong-un. We're starting to hear more and more people talk about the summit. Tanya Ryman is a body language expert. She talks about that initial handshake that everyone saw and what was being said by the body language of President Trump.
If you watch the initial handshake as they're walking towards one another, Trump extends his hand first. Okay, this is what the person of power typically does. So if you think about presidential debates, they both walk out like this, right? So yeah. Once he goes to shake hands, he does it in an upward fashion, which is somewhat submissive. So he's kind of tricking him because as he gets closer, he neutralizes the handshake and then he pulls it just a little bit, that Trump pump that he likes to give. And then touching someone is a signal of dominance. So by touching him, everyone seemed to think, oh, he's being friendly. No, he was making sure that he knew, I'm taller than you, so I have more power, and I'm touching you, so I have the power, I'm in control.
Ryman also talks about the body language of Kim Jong-un.
He automatically feels a little insecure, but they're taught typically to mask with a small smile. So when you watched his facial expression, you didn't see much of a change. So when he tried to pat back, it didn't work because what happened? Trump patted again. So they were going through this little tug of war, and Trump won.
That audio courtesy of Fox Business, and it was back on this date in 1966 when the Miranda rights are first established. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
And good afternoon and welcome to a new edition of Modern Design. We have a bunch of things going on today in studio. We're learning about technology as we go along. So I do have with me in studio Jesse Chen, who's with me, and Connor Duffy. And we're going to do a lot of interesting things today. On hold, I have my last intern, and her name is Carly. And Carly is going to be our guest today. And what we're going to do is talk about decorating for the millennials. About a third of my business is the millennial client, their first apartment, their first house, their first everything. And they decorate much differently than people of my generation and before that. A lot more casual, very different feel. So that's going to be our topic today. We're trying to get the phone call into the system. So I'm going to take some messages. And we'll be back with a really interesting show today.
Well, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for Modern Design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
This is Chamber President Chris Phelan inviting you to the 29th Annual Business and Home Expo with our restaurant showcase. This wonderful event will happen on Thursday, November 9th at our new location, Next Level Arena on Case Boulevard in Flemington from 2 to 7 p.m. If you're a business or organization and would like to participate, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or visit our website at huntertonchamber.org. Rabcoins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investors, Rabcoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
There. Okay, I have a lot of technical things going on today. Connor, you could say what you're going to say.
I'm going to say I put the phone right here.
Okay.
So that way you don't have to hold it the entire show.
Oh, that's terrific, because I'm going to do that. Okay, so Carly, we have you on the line, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Hi.
Okay, so why don't we see if we can make that work. Boy, do I need these guys in the show. 4 years, and I need them more now, I think, than ever. All right, Carly, do we have you on the line?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do the today's weather, and then we're going to talk about our show, which is all about millennials. I think your millennials get a bad rap. Oh, that's not what we want. We don't want that. We want that to end. Okay.
USA Radio.
This is our practice show. Let's take a look at the weather today, and then we'll go from there. A little bit of a disaster today. Okay, it's currently 71 degrees Fahrenheit. This afternoon, it's going to be a really not nice day. Chance of thunderstorms 40% with a high of 76 degrees. Tonight there will be a 40% chance of thunderstorms with a low of 62. Thursday, though, beautiful sunny day with a high of 83 degrees. On Thursday night, mostly clear with a low of 57. On Friday, there's a high of 78 degrees. Friday night, low of 57. On Saturday, it'll be a beautiful sunny day with a high of 85 degrees. Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low of 62. And then finally on Sunday, a beautiful sunny weekend with a high of 86. Well, my name is Richard Scuderi, and our program is called Modern Design right here on WHCR-DB in Flemington. And our topic today happens to be, technology, right? It happens to be decorating for the millennial. About a third of my business is people that are just starting out in their life, and they have very definite ideas about decorating, about what appeals to them. And one of the things that if you listen to my program, you know, is I'm very big fan of mentoring and paying it forward and learning. I was a broadcasting major at Montclair University back in the late 1980s. Guys are laughing at me. Late 1980s. And I was able to do an internship. I was at the Waldorf Astoria, and I was offered an internship on Dr. Ruth Westheimer's show, actually. In New York, and it just brought me to a different level. So I think mentoring is important, and I think you learn so much. I think I've gotten more out of you guys. You know, I've learned more from you guys than you have from me. Hopefully you've learned something. But it really brings a lot to the table, and I think your generation has an embrace of technology, although today I don't know so much, but an embrace of technology, and Carly, that includes you. So, yes. Carly, good morning. Let's play with that a little bit with the sound, because it sounds like nails on a blackboard when she talks.
Yeah.
Can you...
Yep. You want to talk one more time, Carly?
Can you talk one more time?
What?
Can you talk one more time? Are you having a hard time hearing us?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, and she's on four, right? Okay, let's try that. How about now? Carly?
Yeah, that's all right.
Okay, great. So our topic today, and you guys will chime in as well, the topic today is about decorating for millennials. And then, Carly, you and I were talking about, you know, what to put in the stores, that people are looking for now, what you're looking for. So why don't we start with maybe our conversation, and, you know, you're going to be in NYC at some point in an apartment, a nice apartment in a good area. Tell me what you think of when you think of decorating or things that you will want for your home.
One thing I think is really popular with millennials right now are, like, LED lights, just lots of cool lighting and different colors and stuff like that.
You know, I don't know if you can see us. I don't know if you have the Facebook page. As soon as you said LED lighting, they in unison shook their heads yet. Okay, so LED lighting. Okay. That's interesting you started with lighting. That's really interesting. And okay.
Mm-hmm. And?
Sure, absolutely, definitely. But not even city-centric, things that appeal to you. Because, you know, in my generation, I would say I didn't start doing anything with decorating until the 90s. But in the 90s, it was a time of excess. It was the beginning of the dot-com years. There was a lot of money around. When people were feathering their nests, when people are moving, dark wood furniture, heavy, expensive dark wood furniture was in. The jewel tones were in, the very rich... golds and burgundies and all the rich sage greens, all those colors, and it was sort of, you know, picture frames that had gold in them, and it was a return to traditionalism, and it was all about wealth and more is more. I think exactly the opposite is in your generation, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree.
That less is more, right? Mm-hmm. How about you guys? What do you think about that as far as minimalism as being one of the things?
Yeah, minimalism is definitely really big. I see a lot of grays and a lot of colder tones and very very light, almost pastel colors. So very strong contrast from the rich and more gold ornate things.
Do you think the graying? We did a show on the graying of America, but did you think the graying is part of the minimalism? Because it's just in general, it's mm-hmm. less color. What about you, Jesse? What do you think about that?
I definitely think that it does play a role. It is much more like it doesn't pop as much.
Sure,
it doesn't take too much in your eyes. I'm personally a fan of the minimalistic design. Uh-huh. Whenever I choose a desktop wallpaper,
not to generalize,
yeah,
but the Asian culture, especially certain cultures within Asia, seem to have always had that aesthetic. Don't you think?
I'm not too sure myself, but I'd like to think so too. I think I've seen it a lot in my house before and previously. I was always a fan, like I said, of it myself growing up, and my mom always did. My mom was a fan of it herself as well too. So
yeah, sort of a clean lines thing. So I would say all I do now all the time is basically take stuff out of people's take stuff out of people's house. And just, it looks better, right? Less things, less clutter, even less furniture. If you notice when they're designing new houses now, more windows, less opportunity for pieces of furniture, more open, right? Mm-hmm. More open and more minimal.
Well, if you take a look at like the, a lot of the tech things, like personally, I love minimalistic wallpapers okay. on my computer. It just makes it everything look cleaner. But
sure.
Even this is not super recent, but when Apple updated like a new style of what their phones look like,
right.
it's all minimalistic app yeah. icons now. Their backgrounds are trying to be more minimalistic, you know, so
clean and
it's
simple.
Cleaner, simpler, simple. Yeah.
Do you think technology, and this is for all three of you, including Carly, do you think technology has a role in having physical things be more simple?
Which one? I'll start.
Okay.
I definitely think so. I think design and what people kind of want to see is how am I trying to say this?
Is it like functionality?
Yeah, okay. functionality and mm-hmm. everything also affects each other things.
Mm-hmm.
So when people want to see cleaner things in technology, they'll also want to see cleaner things in the rest of their life and especially in their home.
See, I absolutely agree with that because I think what happens is years ago when I was in grammar school and you had to write a report on somebody, you went to the dictionary, and the dictionary was in if you were fortunate enough to have a library or an office, and you went through a ton of books to get to it, and then you had to find the page, and then you had to sort of mark the page, and then you had to read it, and then you had to digest it, and so on. Now you go, George Washington, and it's there right away, right? So it is cleaner. Like, technology is cleaner and faster and simpler, and I think there's a mindset within that. What do you think, Carly?
I think that technology definitely helps. I think something that's going to be big in homes is like smart homes. I think there's a shift towards like sustainability.
Right, right. Let's talk about the smart homes. You know, it's funny you brought that up, Carly. Maybe I mentioned this the other day. About 10 years ago, before the contemporary style was really like popular again and the minimal and the... I worked on a house. A lady moved out from Long Island to New Jersey, Basking Ridge, and she had a 1960 Westinghouse smart home where everything was electric, and it was the house was built in 1960, so everything was like 1960s, minimalist, modern. All the furniture was built in, and it was in pristine shape. It was so much fun to decorate that because it was a little bit ahead of its time that night. And the big thing that I noticed about that was that everything had a place. There wasn't superfluous furniture. You didn't need it. When you went into the front of the house, there was a console built in. There was a place to put your keys, your wallet, and everything. You closed the drawer, you didn't see anything. When I went into the kitchen, the cabinets were flush. There was no ornamentation to the cabinets. You couldn't basically, you'd have to like pop on the cat, you know, push on the door, and then the door opened without any hardware. So the whole concept was minimal and functional. And I think everything in life and design is circular. It has a pattern and it comes around again. And I think that's very much true. So let's talk about one of the things you told me, Carly, the other day when we were having a pre-talk for this, about your desire to find old things. First of all, why do you think that's true?
That hasn't really been around. It's like modern but rustic. I think they're trying to find a balance between the two to make it minimalistic but still lived in.
You know, I think it's funny, and we talked about this last week because our topic last week was about sort of the industrial look, right? But when you have things that are very spare, like industrial, you have to warm it up somehow. I think Connor was talking about the restaurant that he was working in and how there was a blend of like wood and then things that are rustic. But I do think for me, even as a designer, I always have to be on board with what's next. I'm always at night with magazines and clipping and reading. And every night I do Google Images and I come up with, I'll take a topic. Usually it's topic-centric of the shows that we're going to be doing, both on the radio and television. But Google Images, Pinterest, and so on, because I have to be, in order to sell my services, I have to be one step ahead of everybody else. So I find that design is shifting again right before my very eyes. Again, a trend towards industrial, some warmth. I actually see color kind of coming back. How do you feel about color?
I like color. I like color in pops, though. So it's not always so overwhelming.
Right. Well, I think, you know, what's funny is that in the 90s and the early 2000s, color came in where mostly, guys? Where would you say color in, like, in the 90s and, like, the early 2000s? Where did you think in a room the source of color came from? Jesse?
I was going to make it the walls.
The walls. And did Carly, did you say that as well?
Yeah.
It's the walls. So now, what is it? It's the exact opposite, right? What are our walls? Our the most popular color is Riviera Pewter, which is a sort of a gray beige. And all sorts of gray owl, light grays, and like for Benjamin Moore, it's the OC colors. They're basically almost no color with brighter white trim. So, and you know, the outside of the house is the same. What's the most popular color for the outside of a house? Gray with black shutters. Very simple. Sometimes there's a pop at the front door, though, and there's your pop. So you are having color, but color is being reinvented in a very different way. Would you guys agree?
Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah. So I think color is starting to return, but again, as you say, in a smaller ratio. Now, right now, Carly, you know, because I'm back and forth every day, I'm doing a big bathroom, not a big bathroom, but a big renovation for a bathroom in a house that was built in 1940. So we got rid of the powder blue tub and all the colors of everything used to be because it was not original, but I guess it must have been redone in the late 60s or 70s, early 70s. So we took everything out, and all my surfaces are whites and grays. The floor is a 1-inch hex tile, really beautiful, with a little bit slight gray veining running through it, but pretty much pure white. The tub-shower combination is sort of rectangular, really nice-looking new tub, and that's all white. The backsplash and the surround for the shower is all 3x6 clean white subway tile with white grout and a shower ceiling that is white. So pretty much it's a blank canvas. I did a sort of a vanity that was a pale gray with a white undermount sink and a white countertop. So it's the whites and the grays. So right now what I'm trying to do, case in point, is pick a pop color for the – I'm going to ask you each one at a time what you think a good pop color is, and I don't want you to – You can't say the thing that the person said before. So this morning, Carly, before the store opened, I was talking to you and doing my things. I was going through my deck of Benjamin Moore and Sherwin Williams color, trying to find a really good pop color for basically a white backdrop with shades of light gray. So I'm going to give you the first crack at it because you're supposed to be our guest of the day. And tell me what is in your mind with that scenario is a good pop color.
Maybe like a coral.
Okay, coral. What do you guys think about coral? Do you think the color coral is coming back? I went to a wedding on Saturday, and the wedding had about 220 people. I counted 8 women, one was a little girl, that had coral dresses on. And I thought, ooh, maybe this is a new trending color. In like the, around 2000 or so, there was a coral kind of color sort of explosion. And when I had my store at the time, that was in Bernardsville, New Jersey, I painted one room all coral and then decorated it with like dark blue. And the blue and the coral were awesome together. I sold everything I had in the space. But then colors went away, right? So we didn't have that. We had gray and just very neutral colors. But coral, I think, is a very good pop color. And I'm trying to talk them into coral, actually, so that was a good solution. Okay, Connor, what's a good pop color you think for that white and gray palette?
Kind of similar, in a similar vein as coral, I feel like a lot of those beachy colors are coming back as a trend.
Right.
So I would say seafoam green
would
be really nice, especially for like a bathroom, like something a little calmer.
You guys are spot on. So my second choice, not the second choice, but the other choice that I had given this couple and they were going over now, is a color called beach glass, which is exactly that. It's sort of a seafoamy blue-green spa-like color. Now, poor Jesse is bachelor number three, and he has to come up with an answer. And I see a little sweat coming down here because these guys take the two best colors. So I would, and I'll give you a little extra time. If you were to see that scenario, your mom, your family moves into a new house, are any of your bathrooms very white? Because newer houses usually have white bathrooms.
The countertops are white.
Okay, so
the wood there, we have wood though cabinets. So.
Okay, so for you, if you were going to a scenario. Let's say you have your first condo. You get a job out in LA, and you leave us here at WHCRDB, and you go on to bigger and better things. And you get your first condo. You have this great one bedroom condo, and everything's white. And out west, you see a lot of that more contemporary. Everything's white in that bathroom. What do you think would be, as a millennial, what's a good pop color for you?
Well, I was actually going to go not green, not more like a sepia green, but more of a blue color. I think that works well enough to make it a pop color.
Sure.
I was thinking more of like an ocean blue, something that I know you guys did mention beach, but that's really the direction I do want to be headed in.
Sure.
So I was thinking more of a blue or a light blue even too.
Collectively, what do you think of the color navy? Because I see with the first of all, it's always been my favorite color. Connor has it on today. I think that blue, navy blue, has sort of come back into fashion because you can do navy blue with really good geometric prints and it's not so traditional. It's actually up to date, but it's a really rich color. I think most of the colors that we had, we were using the reds, the burgundies, the golds, the sages, the olives, the terracottas. All those colors have sort of gone away. So there's not a lot of saturated colors. The only saturated colors that I can consistently think of right now are a really rich dark blue navy or a really rich dark charcoal, right? And then the other colors are like sort of fluorescent-y kind of colors. What do you think about navy?
I think it gets overlooked, but it really complements a lot of other colors. It almost can be a neutral.
Yeah, you know, we did a show last year before I met you, Carly, and it was one of the shows that you guys did with me that, and we actually, we did the commercial, the promo for the show, on that I was seeing people introducing like cabinets in the kitchen, not the whole kitchen, like you would do the top and white shaker, but the bottom would be dark blue, like a dark navy blue. And of course we know that gold is back now, so it was the blue and the gold on the bottom, right, with a cool modern handle, and the top was white. So we did a whole show just on the blue. So I'm going to skip to Connor because he got kind of cheap. No, to Jesse. Connor got it easy last time. I'm going to switch to Jesse, and let's sort of get out of color a little bit, and let's talk about how millennials like to decorate. Are they into decorating? See, maybe it's because of what I do for a living, when I started, I couldn't wait to have my first apartment. And in my day, in the late 80s, it was all about pastels. Oh, my God, it was all about pastels. Every room in my apartment, I had a four-room apartment, small four-room apartment. First thing I did was cover the hardwood floors with a, it sounds horrible now, doesn't it? With a carpet that was like blush, which is coming back now, right, Carly? Blush was like the color of the day. And my walls were all, my trim was white, my walls were soft white, and then lots of pops of sea foam and mauves, and kind of sort of like what's coming back today, you know, sort of a reinvention of it. Mm-hmm. So for you, Jesse, when you think about decorating, you know, for me it was very exciting. Is it more that you think, oh my God, I'm going to have a great sound system, or I want LED lights, or is it also the soft surfaces that you think about?
I almost think it is, I guess maybe with my circle, it's more of the tech stuff, you know, the new gadgets and stuff you can put in your home. You want to seem trendy on top of the trends of that. You know, I got the newest Google Home or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like that could dip a little bit into furniture. What's the coolest, you know, like what are the coolest couches you can get that matches the new TV you bought for the room and stuff like that too. But I do think some emphasis is put on the more like, you know, the sound system and like the LED lights and stuff like that too.
Amazing. And then we're going to go to commercial, so I'll let you chime in on this.
All right. I think that I agree with you that the technology is a really big part of it, especially the lighting. That's definitely something I didn't expect when I went into college. A lot of people care a lot about lighting and how it really complements the room.
And how is dorm lighting? I thought dorm lighting was the most awful, like, gas station basement lighting on Earth, right?
It's awful. It feels like a prison cell.
Yeah.
You saw how we lit our room, right? We directed lamps at the corner to soften the lighting in our room.
And then bringing in LED lights. But I feel like a lot of people really care about the themes of their rooms as well, and bringing in different colors. Specifically, I see a lot of like rich pinks, rich blues, and then a lot of pastels, like you were saying.
Like a return to the late 1980s. It's kind of amazing, but slightly different, right?
Yeah.
All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to go to news. We're going to work on a little internally here with getting – I'm going to try to take you, Carly, off of my cell phone and put you through the system. So give us about a minute. I'm going to go to our news, and then you'll call back, and we'll be able to hear just a little bit better. All right, we're going to take our full news, and then we'll be back with a lot more of our show after this.
USA Radio News.
President Trump arrived home from Singapore today with a written pledge that dictator Kim Jong-un would completely denuclearize North Korea. But you can count Senator Marco Rubio as one of the folks who's not convinced that Kim will give up his nukes.
Well, I'm skeptical about Kim Jong-un, and we should be. Everyone should be. The president, as I said, is optimistic, and he needs to be. He's the guy negotiating, and, you know, he needs to make the other side feel like he's serious about getting something done. But for the rest of us who are watching and know the history of North Korea, we should be skeptical. This is a country that's made promises before and has broken them.
Democrats are hoping to take back the Senate and the House during the 2018 midterm elections. Michael Loftus, he's a comedian. He explains why going to Hollywood for help when it comes to winning over voters might not be the best idea for Democrats.
I find it just hilarious. Like, how horrible are you as a political party if you don't, like, wake up knowing what it is you want to do?
This is USA Radio News.
Ugh, you guys, I am so ready for the beach.
I'm not.
What? The trip is coming up soon.
Yeah, my beach body is nowhere close to where I want it to be.
Same here. I've got to lose some weight before we go.
Plus, I know you're going to want to post pictures from the trip all over Facebook.
Well, why don't you guys try Calitrin?
Calitrin? That sounds really familiar.
It's super easy to take, and it's even healthy for you. You just take it at bedtime, and it does all the work for you.
You're joking.
No, I'm not joking, and you're going to feel good taking it.
So I got the Calitrin, and I got into pants that I had not been into in a year and a half. It also took my hot flashes away.
Hey, this is Jack, and I've been using Calitrin. I used to go to the chiropractor at least once a week. The Calitrin has definitely helped me, and I definitely recommend it to anybody.
This is Lynn. I've been on Calitrin, and I love it, and I've lost 45 pounds.
So where can I get Calitrin?
You can go to their website at toploss.com, or you can call them at 833-TOP-LOSS.
California voters will have the opportunity this November to divide their state into three separate jurisdictions. USA Radio Network's John Clemens has more.
Backers of the Cal3 initiative needed 365,000 signatures to qualify. They surpassed that with over 600,000 delivered to the California Secretary of State's office. If approved by the voters on the ballot, then authorized by the U.S. Congress, the Golden State will be changed to three separate jurisdictions. Venture capitalist Tim Draper, a Silicon Valley billionaire, says his three-state plan would give Californians a fresh start.
North America will host the 2026 World Cup. Fox Sports president and COO Eric Shanks joined Fox News earlier today.
Well, it's a tremendous day. A lot of hard work is paid off by U.S. Soccer, the Mexican Soccer Federation, and the Canadian Soccer Federation to bring it to all three host countries for the very first time in World Cup history. Three countries are going to host a World Cup.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
The following update is for drivers who pay too much for car insurance due to DUIs, DWIs, tickets, or anything else. Our company specializes in low-cost SR22 auto insurance. We know that mistakes happen and offer free quotes for very affordable auto insurance meant specifically for you, the overpaying high-risk driver. The quote is free and we'll handle the filing so you can start saving money. Call 800-758-0725. 800-758-0725. 800-758-0725.
President Trump arrived right around 8 o'clock Eastern time this morning in Washington, D.C. after his summit in Singapore with North Korea's Kim Jong-un. We're starting to hear more and more people talk about the summit. Tanya Ryman is a body language expert. She talks about that initial handshake that everyone saw and what was being said by the body language of President Trump.
If you watch the initial handshake as they're walking towards one another, Trump extends his hand first. Okay, this is what the person of power typically does. So if you think about presidential debates, they both walk out like this, right? So yeah. Once he goes to shake hands, he does it in an upward fashion, which is somewhat submissive. So he's kind of tricking him because as he gets closer, he neutralizes the handshake and then he pulls it just a little bit, that Trump pump that he likes to give. And then touching someone is a signal of dominance. So by touching him, everyone seemed to think, oh, he's being friendly. No, he was making sure that he knew, I'm taller than you, so I have more power, and I'm touching you, so I have the power, I'm in control.
Ryman also talks about the body language of Kim Jong-un.
He automatically feels a little insecure, but they're taught typically to mask with a small smile. So when you watched his facial expression, you didn't see much of a change. So when he tried to pat back, it didn't work because what happened? Trump patted again. So they were going through this little tug of war and Trump won.
That audio courtesy of Fox Business, and it was back on this date in 1966 when the Miranda rights are first established. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
And we are back with more of Modern Design. My name is Richard Christopher Scuderi. I'm an interior designer, a home stager, a contractor these days. I'm getting texts as we speak about my bathroom in progress. Erg. Anyway, so we'll move forward. And I think now, I think through the efforts of my two trusty broadcasting interns, I think we have you in the system. Carly, say hello.
Hello.
Hey, okay. Sounds a little weird, but I think we'll make that work. Okay, maybe it's because you're on a cell phone. So our topic today, if you're just joining our program, happens to be decorating for the millennial. And again, millennials have their own style, very different. I think each period, either decade or either where you are generationally is different. So I am a Gen Xer, right? So after Gen Xers came, what, Gen Y?
I think so.
And then what? What was it called then?
Then I think it was millennial.
Then it was millennials.
And then Gen Z.
Is that what it is now, Gen Z? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Gen Z is people born after 2000.
Gen Z sounds like it would be a radio host, right? So there's Gen Z with the news,
DJ
right?
DJ Gen Z.
So Carly, in your generation, and also you, I think being female, I think you have a different perspective on it. What do you think about femininity in decorating? Do you think that femininity, because of the changes to a more technology-based, more industrial home, that there's less of that or more of that? What is your take on femininity with decorating?
I think there's definitely it's not as feminine as it used to be. If you look back, like, I think the minimalistic approach, the modern look, is not feminine. I think it's kind of more harsh.
So let's say you have a loft space, right? And you get really lucky, you go into Manhattan, you get a job, and you're fortunate to have like an 800 square foot loft with just one space in a room. So you have, you know, concrete floors, and you have gray walls or white walls with big windows. What could you think you could do or would want to do to feminize the space as a millennial?
I might throw down a carpet.
Carpet?
Wall decoration.
So what's a girly carpet? What would it be like?
Like white, like really soft.
Right, like cottony, or like shag, right?
Yeah.
But a white shag.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then what would you bring in for some color, you think?
I would probably put some stuff up on the wall, pictures or something like that.
Artwork, okay. Yeah. Do you ever hear of something called color blocking?
Yes.
Color blocking is a way of bringing a space that's really big down. I do some commercial projects, and in the late 90s, I worked for J&J in some of their huge corporate cafeterias. And what I did was I created accent walls of different colors in a distance from each other, so it brought it in a little bit. So something that you could also do is create something maybe geometric that went on one wall or something, just to sort of feminize and soften it up. And of course, I collectively want to hear, and I'll start with you, Carly, how you guys feel about wallpaper today. What do you think of wallpaper?
I think it's making a comeback.
Yeah.
I would like some wallpaper.
Where would you put, where as a millennial, where would you want to put wallpaper?
I'm not sure I'd do a whole wall.
No.
Of it, maybe some type of like trim or like paneling.
Right. Jesse, let me ask you that question about wallpaper. How do you feel about wallpaper? Is something that you would like, not like, and if you did, where would you put it?
I don't think I'd like wallpaper. I kind of just like the color, and I like, I guess, taking a little less attention off. But I don't know. I just don't. I always associate wallpaper with kind of almost like
old-fashioned.
Old-fashioned. You'll see it in old hotel rooms, peeling off the wall a little bit or something like that. I kind of just like having.
What are you doing in old hotel rooms, Jesse? All right, so Connor, I want to get your take on wallpaper.
I'm also not too big of a fan of wallpaper, but I think if it's going to be used, I would agree that you shouldn't be doing a whole wall. Maybe if you're only doing like the top half of the wall and then the bottom half is like white trim or something along those lines.
Breaking it up. I tend to agree with that. I'll tell you how this sort of evolved. In the 1980s, people wallpapered huge spaces. People wallpapered kitchens, hallways, like from top to bottom. Think how much wallpaper that is. It was very expensive. And if you had a house that was all wallpapered, you were considered to be wealthy. You know, wallpaper is expensive, and especially when you're doing it in big rooms. Then the 90s came, and it was sort of a new generation of people that wanted rich, dark, saturated colors. They wanted to lose the pastels. And the people that bought their houses in the 90s cursed the people in the 80s that had the wallpaper because most of them did not prime properly. And when you have new construction, which is sheetrock, and sheetrock is paper, and you don't prime first, guess what happens? When you take the wallpaper off, the sheetrock paper comes off. And it was awful. And then wallpaper went out of style in the 90s. People wanted burgundy walls and really rich dark blues and golds. And then they kind of had, you know, trim that was off-white or white. And it was all about the color. And then everyone, you know, all the rooms were just different, beautiful colors. But then, like, I guess around 2005 to 2008, people started to realize as houses got bigger, there were more and more and more rooms of sheetrock. And even if you do lots of different colors, you don't get texture, right? You don't get texture from stuff. And faux painting from the 80s had also gone out of style. So then slowly wallpaper started being introduced back again. And it's funny, to me, I sell more wallpaper at Maven Hill Designs, both in Maplewood and out here in Ringo's, to millennials than any other group. Because the older people don't want to go through that wallpaper again and removing it. But the younger people that don't have that life experience understand that if you're not doing color anymore on the walls, what do you want to do for visual interest? You do texture. Mm-hmm. So things like grass papers, like vinyl, beautiful charcoal grass papers, really in style right now. The look of wood on the walls, the look of really nice texture, like white birch, all those things. You could never achieve that with paint, right, guys? You need some sort of a backdrop to create that texture, which you couldn't get otherwise. And that's not old-fashioned at all, is it?
No.
So it's sort of a return, but yet reinvented. So let's just say you have a room, Carly, that you painted sort of a mid-tone gray, right, with crisp white trim, and then you have one wall of a white birch wallpaper. You get some, your pop color is teal. You get some vases that are like a glass vases that are teal. How good is that going to look?
That's gonna look great, I think.
Yeah, it's a really rich look. I want to ask you guys about yellow because the 90s were the hallmark of yellow. People painted all their rooms yellow. Everything was yellow, and then yellow totally went out of style to more earth tones, and then it went to gray. So I'm seeing yellow. You know, you and I, what are we doing in the store in Maplewood with yellow?
Our pop color.
Yeah, it's our pop color. So I switched all my stuff outside from being red because I have a black and white storefront to yellow. And you know what's interesting about yellow? I don't know if you know this, Carly, or not. Yellow carries more than any color in the color spectrum. If you notice, what color are newer fire trucks?
Yellow.
Yellow. The newer fire trucks are yellow. They're not red because yellow in the color band carries the most from a distance. My house has a huge long driveway, and I have these two entry gates with black pots. And I used to put flowers in. And I thought, okay, I'll do red flowers. It didn't really show. Last year, I did yellow. Oh my God, you could see it from a distance, and it popped. So that's a thing for people when you have a lot of space or it's very dark. Add yellow. Yellow is energy. This week, Carly went with me, the one down here in Princeton. But remember, they were talking about yellow and the power of yellow.
Yeah.
Yellow is a power color. It's energy. They say it's great to use in offices or spaces where you want to think. But again, like wallpaper, yellow is something that you want to use sparingly. Recently, I've seen pops in pieces of furniture that are painted yellow. Have you guys ever seen that?
I've seen it before.
What they're doing now a lot is painting like a sideboard. So let's say you have like a dining room set or a dinette set. You have the wood chairs or maybe metal and wood together. And then the sideboard, the place where you keep your stuff, you paint that sort of a bright pop of yellow. Or maybe you have chairs that are metal and then the legs, you paint a pop of yellow. Where do you think, Carly, that would be kind of a cool place to use that sort of modern yellow?
Yellow?
Yeah.
I can see it in some cushions. I like the flowers, like you said.
Uh-huh.
Just different artwork, maybe.
Yeah. So for you guys, you know, you don't seem to be too crazy about wallpaper. How else would you get, you know, if you have a house that we all agree, millennials like spare, right? So we have that consistently. We all like the grays. I'm in on that, and I love the grays, right?
Right.
And with white trim. So I think we're all on the board with that. We all think we need a pop color, right?
Yes.
Okay, so my favorite pop color right now is blue-green like a teal. Like, it changes all the time, but that's my single favorite pop color. Jesse's favorite pop color.
I'm going to have to go, I like that area of, like, that aqua green, blue, green, teal thing. I tend to just gravitate towards those whenever I'm picking out any kind of color, whether it's, maybe even when I'm not intentionally looking for it, it's just something I gravitate towards because it just feels nice, you know? It's relaxing almost.
I'm going to throw it to you guys and you can collectively answer because it's all about the pop right now to get the look and the warmth that you're looking for. So we started with yellow. We all talked about that. Teal. What do you think about apple, Granny Smith apple, or citrus green as a pop color? Me, love it.
Yeah, I can see the citrus green, definitely. Granny Smith apple.
So I'm just generically saying, you know, a beautiful, rich, very rich green. Jesse?
Yeah, I like it. It's rich. I like. I think it's really cool, really good pop color.
Carly?
I like it.
Yeah, I just think it's... one of my favorites. I'm also seeing a trend of a color combination in everything of blue and navy blue and apple green or navy blue and citrus green together. Are you guys seeing that as well?
Yeah, I've noticed that.
It's a good and it's a trending combination. Mm-hmm. Coral as a pop color. Yes for me on coral. You?
Yes, 100%.
Jesse?
Yeah, definitely.
Carly?
Yeah.
Okay. What about the combination of... gray and red. Now, red has kind of gone out of fashion a little bit, but I did see when I was looking for a couple for their patio furniture, lots of red for summer for patio stuff, lots of red umbrellas, right? Not as popular of a color. Now, red, gray, and black are power colors, and they pair well together. I don't love red these days, and in certain places it could be very rich. I painted a house that was white and black with a red front door. I added gray to that. And it was so much better with the gray, the black, and the red than the white, the black, and the red. So that could be a nice combination. Red is a pop color, Carly.
I think it's kind of predictable, but it works sometimes for sure.
Red is supposed to denote power and energy as well. There's a boldness to red, a confidence. Jesse, what do you think about red?
I think when you mentioned that a lot of outdoor umbrellas and maybe cushions are that color red, I think
that seen that too?
Yeah, I've definitely seen that. Yeah. And I think this summer weather with the sunset going down, you're out there grilling. I think it really complements and brings things together. When it's talking about outdoors, but I do agree with what you're saying. When you're using red in other situations, it's not as strong. But I do understand why it's pretty cool with the umbrellas and the cushions.
Definitely. How about you, Connor?
I think I'm a little bit more hesitant to go back towards red. I think it is like a really strong color and it can look nice. Like I'm imagining the umbrella and the umbrella itself looks really nice.
Right.
But then I'm having trouble picturing it in a setting.
Exactly.
And looking good. So that's where I'm at.
If you all had to go out today and buy a new patio set, I'll start with you and we'll work around. What color would the patio furniture be?
Again, going back to the beach colors, I love that seafoam green.
No, I mean like the metal, like a set. If you have a set, you need to buy a table and chairs. Mm-hmm. What color would you buy?
Honestly, probably either a light gray or straight up black.
Jesse?
It's whatever color is my patio, the stones on my patio, what like kind of fits with that well. So if that means matching it with a more like a lighter color, like that the same similar color to my stone, one that whatever matches my grill to is kind of like what
to go with what's with there. That's a good answer. And then Carly,
I'd probably do like a dark gray.
Yeah, gray, gunmetal gray. Yeah, and again, there we are with the mostly neutral and then a pop on the top. What do you think about plum or purple as a pop color? For me, it's a no. I don't ever find purples attractive. I will say, and I don't want to be a sexist at all, but I do think I see more women looking for plum as a pop color. Not so much the younger generation, but my generation and older. I did a bedroom where we try to make it more modern, and we painted three walls of the bedroom a light gray, like a gray owl, but it was slightly different, like a light gray with white trim. And then the headboard wall, we got a dark, tufted, dark gray upholstered headboard, and then we painted just that one wall, the headboard wall, a dark plum color. What do you think about plum, Carly? Or purple?
I like purple. I think I would go towards a lighter more than a dark. But I like it.
Okay, I don't know who did that, but you're all fired. Anyway, okay. So, Connor, what do you guys think about using purple in decorating as a millennial?
I'm not too big on purple, specifically like rich purple.
Right.
I like lavender, though. So if we could do like a more
pastel-y
purple, I'd be fine with that.
And Jesse?
Yeah, I'm not a big guy on purple, in my opinion. It's just not... I don't associate it with great looking things and turn to kind of sours my taste a little bit. But yeah, you're right about lavender. I do enjoy myself some lavender though.
Let's talk about lighting, because you all like lit up, no pun intended. You all lit up when we talked about lighting. So let's talk about the uses of lighting. Now I'm going to start with talking about fixtures, because as you know, or maybe not know, my first location is by itself up in Maplewood at 191B Maplewood Avenue in Maplewood, next to the post office. But out here in Ringo's, I share my space with Flemington Fan and Lighting. So I have about 1,000 square feet in a 6,000 square foot lighting showroom. So I learned a lot about lighting. And I think for the millennials, lighting isn't just about the task of lighting, although that's very important to them and they're more knowledgeable about it. I think it's also about light fixtures kind of being art forms, right? And part of the whole industrial look. I'm going to start with Connor on that. What do you think about it?
I would definitely agree that the lighting fixtures itself and how it's being lit is very important.
Very important, right?
Specifically, going back to like string lights and LED lights, a lot of millennials really like putting that up around the edge of the ceiling.
Yeah.
And it becomes...
You're going to show me a picture afterwards, because you sort of have, and I think it was Jesse that has that real... the configuration you did, and I don't exactly... Like, I love those Italian patio lights. Do you all collectively know what they are? Those are the outdoor lights that are strung on very thick black, yep. Like right that. And then they have the Edison bulbs in them. Either you see them completely round, or they're like a plum tomato shape, and they have the filament then. So are you talking about inside lights like that, or just like a thin LED light?
Very similar to, I feel like, just because... on a college student's budget, a lot of us tend to go more towards regular, like almost Christmas lights.
Christmas lights, right.
Obviously not like all the colors of Christmas lights.
Sure.
What I did with my room is I actually did hang up those Christmas lights on my side of the room. My roommate from 2 years ago gave me to them for my birthday. So I would just tape them up to the side of the wall. And when the lights were off or we were watching a movie, it kind of give off a nice glow. We had these really bright and violent white LED lights that were built into our dorms.
Yeah, it's so awful, right?
My current roommate and I would always never – we wouldn't turn those on unless we were looking for something. But we'd angle our lamps in the corners of the room. So it would give off a much warmer glow while still lighting up the room. It was a lot less harsh.
And then, Carly, in our last moment, talk about the importance of lighting with you in your space.
I like lights. I like to have different lights to be able to change the mood.
The mood. Yeah. And we all agree that LED is really awesome now, right? It's not like it started, which was horrible. It's kind of a cool light, but still at the same time, there's warmth to it now. It's not blue. When we looked at Christmas lights when they first came out, LEDs were clearly blue, and the incandescents were this beautiful, warm, sort of a goldy white look. Mm-hmm. But it's changed, so you can get anything now. Lighting is really, it's the future in decorating is going to be more about lighting, I think, than ever before. All right, guys, I thank you for being my guest today, giving me the millennial perspective. And we'll be back next week, and we're going to bring a lot of new shows to you, a lot of new things coming up. So I thank you for continuing to listen to Modern Design and also watching us on Facebook Live. Thank you, and have a terrific day, guys. Thanks.
USA Radio News.
President Trump arrived home from Singapore today with a written pledge that dictator Kim Jong-un would completely denuclearize North Korea. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul says this is a step in the right direction.
I'm very hopeful, and if it comes to fruition, if we actually get denuclearization, President Trump will have done something miraculous, something historic. Now, we're still in the very beginning, so just the fact that North Korea signs an agreement doesn't always mean they'll adhere to that agreement.
Meanwhile, Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn says businesses down in Tennessee can't wait for phase two of President Trump's tax plan.
Yeah, I was visiting with a company in Knoxville yesterday, 1,500 employees. They increased salaries. They increased their hourly wage. They increased 401k benefits and other employee benefits. And that is, as they say, round one. They're looking forward to tax cuts 2.0.
This is USA Radio News.
Okay, so the big question for any decision you're going to make, is this actually going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, which is a brilliant way of sharing healthcare costs, you may have wondered that. Does it work? Well, so did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful. But then his wife needed emergency surgery, and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in, and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared. And the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works. And it's so easy to get your questions answered, too. So why not? You can call right now. 833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE. 833-39-BIBLE.
Why are American soccer fans looking forward to 2026? USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has the answer.
FIFA makes its decision on where the 2026 World Cup will be played on Wednesday morning. The announcement?
The member associations of Canada, Mexico, and USA have been selected by the FIFA Congress to host the 2026 FIFA World Cup.
That joint North American bid standing up to a bid by Morocco. The decision means matches will be back in the U.S. for the first time since 1994. And reacting to the news, President Trump tweeted, quote, "The U.S. together with Mexico and Canada just got the World Cup. Congratulations. A great deal of hard work." For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.